I'm so in love with you. That's you. Whatever you want to do, that's all right with me. And also, I don't have much choice. 'Cause you make me feel so brand new. And I want to spend my life with you. So
everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Daphne.
And I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jason.
And this is the Handmaid's Tale podcast.
This week we're covering The Handmaid's Tale, Season 5, Episode 5, Fairy Tale.
Remember when I was saying how I didn't want to go back to Season 1 and 2 where it was all horrible and June was in a better place?
Yeah.
I jinxed it. Sorry about that, everybody.
You know, though, I feel like in this episode we got to see June. She's focused on Hannah now. Like, there's no more of that. I feel like in this episode she's not focused on Serena. She's focused on
revenge.
Hannah.
Yeah.
And I like this side of June. We're getting to see her and Luke work together, which is not something that we've seen before. Really? So
I'm just saying she's captured by Gilead once again.
How do you know it's Gilead?
I don't think it's Gilead.
Oh, really?
They weren't dressed like Gilead.
Oh, no. Okay.
I think it might be the Resistance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I thought the same thing initially, and then on second watch, and that I had that in my notes, is that I don't know if I can take June and Luke being in Gilead's hands.
No.
So I'm really
That's totally what I thought happened.
I know. So I'm really hoping it's the Resistance.
Because it was, I mean, we're getting into it, but it was a mine. The guy said the rebels leave these scattered around.
Uh-huh.
Right
before and they had black ski caps on.
Okay.
They didn't look like we've seen Gilead look like, but that doesn't necessarily
I think it's probably not them then. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. That puts a new wrinkle on it. Yeah,
I was thinking it's kind of like No Man's Land. Like, they were in No Man's Land.
They were in No Man's Land, yeah.
So, it has to be, like, rebels. Okay. It can't be. At least I hope it's not.
Yeah, me too.
I can't deal with that. That's too much.
I was thinking it was Gilead, and I was thinking, well, I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens to Luke. We've never seen what happens to Luke in Gilead. And then I'm like, well, they would probably just hang him, which I don't want to see that.
Yeah, me either. I'm getting concerned for Luke.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say that, as we know, Season 6 is the last season. Mm-hmm. I hold my breath about everybody. I'm really worried because this show goes for the jugular. And we know that it's not all going to be June on top and them winning for another season and a half. And that really worries me. Like, I'm just trying to steel myself for what could come.
That's how I felt at the end of Game of Thrones. I just kept saying, this is a mean show and bad things happen, so don't expect rainbows. And so then if you do get them, it's nice, but
don't get too attached.
Yeah.
Don't get too attached to anybody, because you don't know what could happen. And this show, has done so many different things to characters that we care about that, mm-hmm. you know, they could pull the rug right out from under us.
And punch us in the face.
Yes. And say, there you go.
And chop off our finger. You're
welcome.
Have a nice day.
Thank you for watching.
Yes, that's fully what I expect.
Yeah. Well, I think we should probably just jump right into this. And I think, Jason, it's your week to go first.
Is it? Again?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I didn't realize. All right. Well, my number one is called Serena Becomes a Victim of the Culture She Helped Create. Putnam is criticizing Serena because the Gilead Information Center got shut down, and he's like, all we've gotten is an empty building and more bad press. And then she gives this proposal. She says, focusing on Gilead was a mistake. I think we should focus on fertility and conception. It's all about the babies. That's what people want to hear about. And I'm thinking that's incredibly smart. Because mm-hmm. That's how Gilead was even possible in the first place, because of the low birth rate and people coming to the conclusion that this is what it would take, or at least taking advantage of the situation and promising that to people. And that's how you get invested in an ideology. You get people invested in an ideology by making them feel like it will give them something that they are missing or that they want. I think the Gilead Center, I mean, it kind of got taken away before you could see if it was effective, but it might not be that effective anyway, because most people either already don't like Gilead or who cares about Gilead. What they care about is what they already want personally in their lives. The thing is, when you get invested in something like that, it's like a cult, you know, there's mm-hmm. consequences to it. And then we get a couple of flashbacks of Serena. And I think I don't know for sure. And I'll definitely be interested in both your takes, but I thought it was kind of to show how Serena herself got indoctrinated into the ways of Gilead because of her own fertility problem. And that maybe she wasn't so enthusiastic about certain parts of Gilead, but let herself go with it. And she knows this is the way to get people interested in Gilead, focusing on birth, because that's how she became supportive of the things that maybe she wasn't so supportive of. I don't know. But anyway, first flashback is Naomi and Serena at this adoption center or foster care home, looking through this window at a bunch of sad, bored kids. And Naomi's like, can you see any of these in your home? And she goes, no, I can't. She goes, I mean, they rescued these children from those unfit mothers. And it's like, dude, you freaking stole kids and now they're stuck in this room with no parents. That's so messed up. And Serena's like, they need good homes, good families to raise them in God's light. I'm like, you fucking stole them from their parents. And you don't even want one now. Like, you're going to shuffle it off to somebody else who will take an older child. So it's just enraging to me, clearly. But anyway, Naomi asks her, this is the key part, if she's considering getting a handmaid. And she says, no, Fred and I are still trying, which at this point, you know, we've talked about whether it's okay for them to have sex. Well, right now it is, because their intent is to procreate. But I think the real point is that she's resisting the handmaid system. Then in the second flashback, where Lydia comes and shows Serena brochures of the handmaids, like she's showing carpet samples or something, horses, like, this one has good bones, good genes. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And by the way, a sure way to get Serena not to pick a certain one is to say she also caught the eye of Mr. Waterford.
And Lydia probably knew that too. She was steering her away from that person. Don't you think?
I don't know.
I think so.
As soon as she said, oh, this one caught the eye of Mr. Waterford, she's like, yeah, I'll just put that over here. I don't really think so.
Remember, June wasn't the first handmaid that had lived in that house.
No, it was the one who wrote, don't let the bastards keep you down, and then
exactly.
hung herself.
The
one that killed them. Yeah, that hung herself. So
that's
we're
who
not
they
sure.
just picked.
Yeah.
Probably.
Was she just picking the first one or?
I think so.
The second one. I think it was the first one.
Yeah. I think this is when she first decided, and she wasn't happy about it, you know, the look on her face. And that could be because she knows this is going to be another woman's going to sleep with her husband, or that she has to admit, this signifies she has to admit that they failed to have a baby on their own. I think it's all of that. And just also that she doesn't like this whole thing at all anyway, you know, it's a necessary evil kind of a thing. and maybe not what she had in mind. I mean, her book, A Woman's Place, sounds like she thinks women should focus on being mothers, but you got to get the babies from somewhere. And this is maybe the part that I don't know if she considered it. You know, we heard, like, one of the listeners said, three men in a back of a car made up this whole handmade thing. But what did she think? Like, where did she think the babies are going to come from? Anyway, so this is how she came to come to terms with the handmade system, use it for herself. And once you've been indoctrinated into a system like this, you have to face the consequences. And now she's facing these consequences. So she comes face to face with the hard truth that there's a lot of shit that comes along with buying into Gilead, especially if you're a woman. And what really, when that really hits home for me is when Mr. Wheeler finally comes to meet her, and he's like the most condescending person ever, and younger than I thought too, which makes it even worse. He tells her he spoke with commanders about this proposal, and they're going to move forward with it without her to do the fertility center. You have input, of course, but most pregnancies do end in bed rest, and while you're not exactly there yet, can't be too careful, can't be running around the city, your baby needs... baby's needs come ahead of any plans or ambitions. This is especially interesting to me because I just covered Fargo on Walking Dead cast, where it's Frances McDormand, like 7 months pregnant, kicking ass, you know, and being the best character ever. Anyways, I think he gave her some iron, Mr. Wheeler. I understand you need to keep your levels up.
Yeah, they didn't say what it was, but I assumed...
I don't know. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. But it felt like she was being treated like a child, you know, make sure to take this every day. And it even looked like Gilead, like the light coming through the way it does in Gilead. And I just think the whole point of this episode is Serena gets to feel like people made June feel in Gilead when she was pregnant. Like she's nothing now except a vessel for this child. Nothing else about her matters. And she asked for a cell phone and he's like, oh yeah, that's a security concern. You understand. And she's just left there gobsmacked. And like, I feel kind of bad for her, but on the other hand, I'm like, ha ha, you reap what you sow.
It really had the feeling of like, don't worry your pretty little head about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, not only is this whole thing about, you know, her getting sidelined and the men going, no, you don't get to have power. But it's also just the way that every woman is made to feel in Gilead, that you are nothing, like I said, but a vessel. Your only worth is in bringing a child into this world. And so that on second watch of this episode made me see other parts of it in a new light where, Mrs. Wheeler introduces her to her friends and they're all fawning over her and feeling the baby kick. And she looks so happy and she's getting the pregnant woman treatment that she got before in Gilead when she wasn't actually pregnant, when June was in the next room pregnant. But this time it's real. Everyone's still just relating to her as a mother, as a vessel, not as a person. Mrs. Wheeler says, seeing Mrs. Waterford gives me hope. It strengthens my fate, my faith, and talking about why God chose her to put his light into her and all this, such a miracle. I still just think even that's kind of sinister because it's just like you only matter as a mother, not in a person, as a person in and of yourself. And that's like for Serena, that's like, oh shit, that's not what I want. I want to be a mover and a shaker. I don't want to be sidelined into this role and not matter in any other way. And then I'm like, where does what happens to her after the baby's born? I'm really starting to think there, because I thought maybe she was going to end up a handmaid and then the show pulled a 180 on us and started, gave her that big funeral with Fred. And then she got this center and everything. And I'm like, well, they tricked me again, but I am starting to think maybe they just took their time with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that scene where Naomi was talking about children taken from unfit mothers could actually be foreshadowing for Serena. They may, because people don't see her as a typical Gilead wife. So I wonder, Diana, who used to host this podcast and wrote in a message that really made me think about this too, that maybe she's going to be in big trouble when she has that baby.
Mm-hmm.
You think so too?
Yes.
Yeah. I think she's only safe while she's pregnant. After that, I don't know what's going to happen. Even when she offered the opportunity for Alanis to listen in on the phone call with Lawrence, and she just says, oh, women shouldn't burden themselves with business things. The way she said it was almost in this judgment. I felt like it was judgmentally.
It was.
Mm-hmm. And all I can think is you're starting to slip, that facade, that, yeah. Because I think it's a house of horrors. I think it is not a safe place for her. And
the way the actress played it, I thought she was brilliant, by the way, the Mrs. Wheeler actress.
Yeah.
The way the part was written, though, I think it could very well seem completely judgmental. But the way the actress played it, it seemed to me like she genuinely adored Serena. And she calls her powerful and everything. And she's kind of curious when Serena says yeah, we're going to get our center back going. And she's all, well, I thought they said it was shuttered. And she goes, well, we can't let some rules get in the way of God's will. And she kind of looked at her with a smile and it cocked her head. I felt like there was admiration in that, too. I could be wrong. But I mean, either she's just judgmental and she's hiding it, which could very well be the truth, or there could just be some cognitive dissonance going on there where sometimes you have two thoughts that don't go together. They're like contradictory, but it happens all the time in humans. So I think she does admire Serena, but I also think that she's judgmental of her too, or, you know, well, like, yeah.
It reminds me of the Stepford Wives.
Yeah.
Which is an old movie that they remade with Nicole Kidman a bit later. All of these wives, all of the friends of Mrs. Wheeler, all had the same personality. It's like they've all had lobotomies, mm-hmm. and they're just regimented to this life. And
yeah, they have these roles that are very prescribed. Mm-hmm. And so if you're sort of, that's your knee-jerk thing is, oh, this is my role, I don't do business, blah, blah, blah. But then you'll have some other impulses that don't fit within that. And those mm-hmm. might come out too. And so you have to manage like these conflicting impulses maybe, you know. So she might admire Serena's strength. She knows Serena started this center, but then also believe, eh, women don't do that. So how do you hold those two things together at the same time, you know?
Well, and with the Wheelers, we're not really sure. They seem to be Canadian, but they're tied in with Gilead.
They're who's Canadian.
I
think they're Canadian.
Who's really in charge here? Like, who is telling who what to do? Are Lawrence and Putnam telling the Wheelers what to do with Serena?
I think they are in an active organization to bring Gilead to Canada. And so that's why they're working with the Gilead commanders. I think that's their goal. Their goal is to bring the beliefs and the value system of Gilead to Canada.
Yeah, they seem to fully, like, if there's a religion or, I don't know, the Sons of Jacob, is that still what they call themselves? Like, whatever ideology Gilead espouses, these guys, even though they're not citizens, they still are in that ideology too. Mm-hmm. They're in the church or whatever, you know.
Yeah, they are, but the wives don't subscribe to the same style of dress. Like, they're not all wearing teal.
They're not all wearing teal, but they practically have a uniform on. They're all wearing high-necked, loose-fitting, muted colors, all wearing dresses, no pants. So, like, it's, mm-hmm. I think we're seeing those stepping stones to it.
Mm-hmm. And there's a maid with a more traditional maid's outfit, but mm-hmm. might as well be a Martha.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I am really concerned. One of the things I wondered, if this is, in fact, a sinister situation for Serena, where they're going to take her baby, is this something that Lawrence and Putnam are involved in, or are the Wheelers acting on their own?
I doubt Lawrence would be involved in it, but I would say yes to Putnam.
Yeah.
That putts.
Yeah. Don't like him. So what, Jason, do you have any more thoughts on that? Or
no, not really.
Okay. All right. Wendy,
I'm just going to continue because this is one of my points, too.
Okay.
And good. I think I agree with almost everything you said, Jason. Everything you said. Why do I have to say almost?
I mean, hey. Disagreement can be fun.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that Serena looks outside and she sees armed guards around the Wheeler's property. I think at first she kind of gets this smug, big smile on her face and you can tell she feels safe. But then later, I think she gets to thinking about that. Like, are they there to keep people in or to keep people out?
Mm-hmm. She seems like a prisoner by the end. She is.
Yes.
She's a prisoner.
When she was walking around the grounds and she was looking out of the bars, I really got that prisoner sense from her.
Yeah, she wanted to go and they wouldn't let her.
She's not allowed to do what she wants to do. She's not allowed to communicate with anybody. She's not allowed. She wanted to talk to the lady that was bringing her flowers. They just would not let her. I mean, they're cutting her off.
From everything.
And they say things like, but it's a beautiful day, which is kind of the subtext is, don't worry about it.
Go take a walk.
Yeah. You're a prisoner.
Yeah. And I wonder,
at least it's a nice place.
About Ezra, because I thought he was someone that they had just found to kind of protect her.
Yeah.
But I think he works for the Wheelers.
Yeah. I think it's all a network.
Yeah. He's on their team.
The scene with all the moms feeling her belly was very cringy. It seemed that part of Serena liked the attention and part of her didn't.
Mm-hmm.
When she flashes back to early Gilead with the orphanage, if you noticed, it was all children of color or older teenage children, the ones that no one wants, which is so applicable to today. You know, everybody wants white babies. Nobody wants to adopt sullen teenagers or children of color in general. You know, that's where the problems lie.
Yeah. And what makes it, though, even worse is they pretty much said those kids did come from homes that were fine, maybe.
Right.
You know, they were stolen from their homes. They weren't like kids that ended up on the street because their parents couldn't take care of them or something.
Right.
They were what Gilead deemed unfit, which is a crazy standard.
Right. And you took a 12-year-old away from their parents and then you expect them to smile and play nice. And
yeah.
And again, I thought Serena's idea about the birth center or the fertility center for Gilead was just genius. You know, there's a lot of women out there that are willing to deal with the devil if it gets them a baby. I mean, you could just see it on their faces. They're all very desperate. And she's got exactly what they want. And they're willing to sell their souls for it.
Well, remember just a couple episodes ago, the woman that approached June in the park.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
she was pretty crazy.
Desperate.
She was really desperate.
Like she was going to grab Nicole and run off with her.
Yeah.
At first, I thought that was Mrs. Wheeler. But
me too.
Yeah. On first watch, I thought that was her.
I don't think it is.
And just like you said, Jason, when we first see Mr. Wheeler come up to June's room, come up to Serena's room, it had that same, I had total deja vu of the first couple episodes of Handmaid's Tale where we see June in her room. And that plays a big role in the book because it was kind of the only place where June felt like she could be alone with her thoughts. And it was the only time a handmaiden was ever alone was when they were in their room. Like the furniture's really sparse. It just had that same feeling to it. Mm-hmm. And I thought the same thing. I thought, you know, is Serena going to be the first handmaiden in Canada?
Yeah.
Like, is that the whole point of this? And it has that feeling.
It does, yeah. Yeah, the more we talk about this, the more I think you're right, Daphne, that's maybe Mrs. Wheeler just looks at Serena as the first Canadian handmaid.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think she's holding back. Like, she's just trying to be to appear as kind as possible, as understanding as possible. But behind that facade is, a woman who's desperate to have a baby and wants this child. And Serena, I have to wonder, when she wanted that cell phone, if she was going to call 1-800-Tuello.
Mark Tuello.
Get me the fuck out of here.
Because it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're totally right.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
And I think she does admire her in that she got pregnant, and that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And she thinks God got her pregnant and then sent her there so she could have baby, maybe.
And she's handling her with kid gloves, and I think that's truly heartfelt, but I think that only goes as far as after that baby is born.
Because look at how she might be perceived by her friends if she gets that baby. Well, I have a baby. We can get one for you, too. We'll get you a handmaid. This is how it can work. Mm-hmm. And she'll be this beacon of hope that they're treating Serena as right now.
Interesting.
I can't wait to see how that unfolds.
I mean, we don't even know for sure that's going to happen, but
I know.
No, I mean, the more you guys are talking, in the Wheeler house, something's going to happen. Yeah, they're leading it to something. I'm okay with whatever it is.
Yes, I am too. I want to know.
Yeah. That was it.
Okay. Well, I want to add to that, because one of my points is actually the sterile vision that we get, which is Naomi and Serena, when they're looking at the children and talking about the handmaids. Honestly, the things that they say about those kids are things that I used to hear when I worked at an animal shelter. You don't know where they came from or who they came from. You know, they were brought here because they were with unfit parents. Those are the types of things that I used to hear when people would bring in a stray dog. It's really sad, because it's almost like they're looking at those kids like they're unwanted. It broke my heart, because it kind of, you know, took me back to that. It was so sterile with no emotion at all. You know, the visual of the white walls, I mean, the walls couldn't have been any whiter.
Yeah, they made it look like a place that kids would not enjoy being in.
Yeah, and you have the glass windows. It's like they're shopping. Like they're there they to shop.
Yep.
And that just reminded me of what it, you know, a pet store or a shelter. It ripped my heart out to see that, because those kids, I mean, even Serena was waving at that one little girl. And the little girl did not even, she just kept, looked at her and then kept coloring. It's just so sad to think that they thought they were doing the right thing by taking these children away from unfit parents. And then instead, they're living in these little rooms with the glass windows for people to come by and adopt them or take them home. And it, oh.
And Hannah was probably in one of those rooms at one point.
Exactly. And I think that, Jason, you're right about it, the stages of Serena's acceptance of Gilead. Because in that first scene, like we were just talking about, they talk a little bit about having a handmaid, but that, you know, Serena's not ready to give up on that. And then later we see the flashback where she has had to give up on that and is moving forward with the handmaid. And I think
chose that, to. Yeah. But
yeah. But even then, it's like she's buying a horse.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like you said, it's like she's looking for a piece of beef or
a
computer
car.
Equipment or a car. Mm-hmm. Like, here's a file. Here's a dossier on this. How do you get beaten down to that point that that is life? I mean, it's just, it's depressing to watch. The show, of course, is always depressing, but I felt like the hope was ripped out at that point.
I mean, I don't feel any sympathy with her, though. She helped bring this whole thing about, and even if it isn't exactly what she thought, then what did she think was going to happen? You know, I mean,
I probably have a little smidge, just a little smidge. Probably overshadowed by, yeah, that's what you get.
Yeah, I think seeing all of this just, I mean, when you sign on for something, you think it's going to be one thing, and sometimes it does turn out to be something else down the road. Even if she saw that things were going in the direction that she really wasn't happy about, what on earth could she have done? I mean, really? I think they were in too far at that point.
I don't know.
I'm not trying to make everyone have sympathy for Serena. Yeah. I'm just pointing out that when you're in a situation like this, you bought into something. I mean, Nick did as well, and he's done things that he didn't probably ever think he was going to do. Sometimes survival, there's different types of survival, and maybe in Serena's case, she, you know, maybe she wasn't happy with Gilead. Maybe she doesn't subscribe to everything, but there really wasn't anything she could do.
I don't know. She,
yeah, I'll buy that.
She, well, I mean, I think about it in terms of cults, where when you're indoctrinated in the cult, there's so much pressure in a lot of different ways to do things that you later, once you get out and get deprogrammed, are not proud of. Not only that, but she helped form the ideals of the cult, and not all of them, but she did help. So that's why I have little sympathy for her. I mean, for crying out loud, she helped create this system where people are deemed immoral because, like June, she married a divorced man, and then she's ripped away from her child and forced to be repeatedly raped so that Serena can steal her baby. Like, it's just, I have, when I remind myself of that, it's hard for me to have any sympathy for Serena. I mean, just say no, don't do it. You know, I don't know. I guess if you're a wife and you say no to a handmaid and then they're going to send you to the colonies, is that what happens? Then I guess, yeah, then
maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, we don't know what the ramifications are if they...
We don't really know.
Right. I mean, we don't know what would have happened if she and Fred decided, no, we're not going to do this.
Because Lawrence, we saw, they just kept pressuring him, right, to take a handmaid. Yeah. And so he said, fine, send one over, but then didn't do anything right. with
he
her.
He had multiple handmaids. They had to keep
they kept checking on him and threatening to take away his power and everything. So yeah, I think you're right. I do see your point. If you don't go along with the system, then you're going to suffer for it for sure. Mm-hmm. But she, man, she really went along with it to the point where when June, just because they thought she was pregnant, but it turned out to be a false alarm, she threw June down on the floor.
Oh, there's...
So she wasn't just like, oh, okay, well, let's just treat her really nice. And she was like, fucking produce, handmaid. You know, yeah. She's like the worst example of the system.
Well, think about how angry she probably was that she had to have a handmaid sleep with her husband. She probably didn't like that very much.
Don't take it out on the woman.
No. Right. But I think there are things that drove her to this point. I'm not excusing her. I'm just saying that she may not have had as many choices as you think. I mean, what could she have done? Run across the border by herself?
Yeah, be kind. I have a lot more respect for Lawrence, who did, you know, tried to keep up appearances, but was kind. And Serena just went full bore into the worst kind of a version of this that she could have ever been.
I mean,
she stood there while Fred forcibly raped June because they thought that might act, you know, not the usual docile ceremony where June just gets to lay back and try to think of something else, but more like she was fighting him and saying no. And that's Serena was on board with that.
Right.
So, no, fuck that woman. That's what I say.
But remember, too, Lawrence is a man in Gilead. He has a lot more power than any woman.
Serena has abused any little bit of power she gets. Just like she got a little power in Canada. And what does she do? She sends June a letter saying, Dear Offred, like...
She's not a good person.
No, she's going to abuse any little piece of power that she has. And
I'm not.
Maybe she could change, but I don't think she has demonstrated that she is.
She did one good thing when she gave Nicole to June, mm-hmm. and then she turned around and tried to get her back and totally regretted.
She's flip-flopped.
She had to do that, though. She had to try to get Nicole back, because what would it have looked like to Gilead if she didn't? Sometimes she
wanted
decisions.
Her back. It wasn't because of Gilead. Well, she hated June, and yeah.
But it's also about survival, I think, with her too. I think she knows. Mm-hmm. She gave Nicole to June in a fit of emotion and then had to deal with the consequences after. I'm not saying that I support Serena or that I think she's a good person. I'm just saying there are other things to consider. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, when you point out those other things, then it just makes me realize how bad Serena is, because because another woman who was confronted with all those forces pushing her to do these horrible things may have reluctantly done it, but Serena did it with relish, you know? So that's why it just reminds me, when you're saying all these things that put her in these situations, she didn't seem like she was feeling the pressure of needing to get Nicole back. She was like right there with Fred. Let's do this, to the point where she went to Canada to try to get her.
She didn't really have a choice. Whether she did it for herself or to save face with Gilead, she really didn't have a choice. I think she did it for herself, yes.
Yeah, I don't care if she had a choice. My point is where she was coming from, you know?
Is a place of malice.
Yeah, yeah, or selfishness and no compassion for anybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're right. In some cases, she didn't have a choice, but that doesn't change that.
The way
who
she
was, yeah,
right.
As a person.
The way she went about it was not.
That's what I think. Not I mean, okay. I'm sorry. I'm pushing back against you, but...
No, that's what this is about, to have these conversations.
It's interesting. I'm glad you brought up all this stuff.
Yeah. But that's it. Man. That is it. I'm off my soapbox. Jason, it's your turn to bring forward another point.
Well, I was having trouble breaking everything that happened with Luke and June into more than just one point. So it's all just one, just sort of a recount of what happened with my thoughts. So maybe I'll just go like halfway and then let somebody else take over.
Well, I think this episode in particular was really about two things.
Yeah.
It was about Serena. It was about Luke and June. And so I think
usually I can like find ways to break it apart, but for this, it just feels like it might be more interesting to just talk about it in the order that it happened and little things, but I'll just like go halfway. Okay. Sound all right? Okay.
Yeah.
I call it the Luke and June fairy tale. So June's dreaming of this time when she took Hannah to an aquarium. I think that's just to remind us that Hannah is what's on June's mind.
Yeah.
And I like that they're focusing on that, because it's like the biggest piece of personal unfinished business for June. It's her focus, and it gives the show a drive too for the main character and everything. Anyway, so she's woken by a call from Lily from Mayday saying this guardian's coming across the border to give information about the type of school that Hannah's in or something like that. And so they go there, and Luke's able to go this time. I thought that was a little, like, before Moira made a point to say it's only women allowed, but I don't know why it would be different now, but apparently it is. So Luke goes.
Maybe because they knew they were going to have to leave anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're pulling up stakes to get out. They're not going to be located there anymore.
So they get there. They learn that border patrols around No Man's Land have stepped up and that the Guardian can't come there. And so then Luke's like, I'm going to go across. And I'm like, what? Oh, my God. June's been talking about going in. And now Luke goes. But last week, at least, especially, really built up that I think if Serena hadn't made that dig at him last time, that maybe he would not have gone in now, because that really got to him when she said, you didn't do anything, you know? I don't know.
I think as soon as he saw Hannah up on that screen, he was going.
That changed everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think everything has changed for him now.
And also, on first watch, I think I missed the context that they were just trying to get information about this school. And I just thought he just then decided, since they're at the border, to go in and try to save Hannah. That's what I thought he was doing. And I was like, what? That's a big deal. But no, they were just going to go to meet with the guardian to get information about the school. And June looks so proud of him. And then she says, I'm going with you. And Moira's like, fuck me, like rolling her eyes. I'm like, man. So I think this whole thing, like, it's, well, of course it's scary. Like, wait, you're going to Gilead? Something's going to happen. Lila gives them this bag with supplies for May Day, which I think they're just taking advantage of somebody going in there. And I love that Moira hugged Luke because they didn't even used to like it. Well, she didn't even used to like him, but now they're very close. That was nice. And then Luke says, who are we meeting? And Lily says, no names. Names are dangerous. Well, that is consistent with them just trying to learn as little as possible about each other so they can't tell on each other. But it was maybe to make us suspect that this guardian isn't the right guy, and also to make us worry later when Luke does ask his name, and it's Jaden, because she'd said names are dangerous, and it's like, Luke, what are you doing? But anyway, on their way in, June's flashing back to when they first tried to escape with Hannah. It could have been around this area for all we know, right? Near the border. I'd never made that connection before. Maybe that was in no man's land or near it. But that was such a horrible moment when they got, you know, they lost Hannah when all this started. And then I'll stop here. I'll just say a little bit more. So they meet this guardian contact and, oh wait, I'll say this one part. So then the whole sequence from when they first meet this guardian until the end of the episode, I feel like the show's playing with our fears that they're going to get caught because we're worried the whole time. And the show does that so well. It plays our emotions like a fiddle. Yeah. I thought it was hilarious that raspberry beret was the code phrase. The guardian yes, points his gun and goes, raspberry, so raspberry. And she goes, beret. And I'm like, man, if someone yelled raspberry at me at random, I might just answer beret. So I don't know how good that is.
As soon as he said raspberry, I was like, yes.
It's hilarious. So he takes him to this abandoned bowling alley and, man, some really cool stuff happened there, but I'll stop there so I don't just say the whole thing.
And if you're listening to this podcast and you don't know what Raspberry Beret is, go away.
Go to Apple Music or Spotify. Look it up.
Yeah, you need to be listening to that. That's a song you need to hear.
I'll just continue in that vein, Jason, since you're stealing all my points.
Okay.
Luke and June seem singularly focused on Hannah right now. There just doesn't seem to be any more hesitation, no more agonizing over the danger, over losing their place in Canada. They're just plowing full ahead, and I really liked it. They seem together as we have only seen them in flashbacks before, and I really love the vibe that they have going. I think that the actors and actresses are just doing an amazing job because you can really feel it without them having to say anything. Mm-hmm. And June thoughts are definitely when she lost Hannah on that same border in the woods. And I it really hit home to me that they are right back where they started. They were together making a very dangerous, risky attempt to save their little girl and not have her end up in Gilead's hands. And here they are again in the same place. It really felt like the same place trying to save Hannah. That's what they're trying to do.
One thought I had was, what about Nicole, though? It's a bit reckless to leave a kid at home.
But Nicole's safe.
She has Moira. Mm-hmm. So that's
and Rita. And
super important, yeah. But she might lose her mom and dad again.
And it is risky. And I think that's probably what's kept Luke and Moira kind of grounded in their mission of not taking those risks. But I think just seeing Hannah on that screen and knowing that the clock is ticking before she's raped by some commander at her age of 12 or 13, however old she is.
And the government's not doing anything to help them.
No. Yeah.
This is government sanctioned.
I mean, Canada.
Oh, no, they're not going to do anything about that. And, you know, that's something that got me thinking. And I know in the messenger chat with a bunch of our friends, somebody was almost like, somebody who's Canadian was kind of upset, like, oh, I can't believe Canada would do that. And I understand it is a fictional show. And I don't feel like Canada would go to the lengths they are. Like, the Wheelers, I mean, Canada and Gilead, if they're not in a formally declared war, they're definitely in military actions against each other. And I feel like what the Wheelers are doing is probably against the law, right?
Potentially. You would think.
Yeah, I mean, they're plotting with the leadership of Gilead. Mm-hmm. So you would think that would be frowned on.
Yeah.
And yeah. All the protesters that wanted people to leave, go so back, gross. Go back. And I'm thinking, where are they supposed to go? There's no America.
They don't care. They just don't want them here. I mean, that's we here, see yeah. that all the time. It's weird yeah. to see yeah. it in reverse. It go is. Home, Yankees. That's weird.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
That's a tactic I often try to use in arguments, is try to put someone who's arguing against something in that person's position, you know, like mm-hmm. kind of like you did with me with Serena just a minute ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it can help you sort of
yeah.
empathize.
See all the sides. Even if you yeah. don't agree, seeing all the sides does help
it's paint important.
A fuller picture.
Yeah.
Yep. Just wanted to continue about June and Luke. I really enjoyed, I felt like there was just a different vibe going on between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
When Luke played the piano and he sang that song, it was just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And his voice so was great. Really nice, and it was so sweet. But I do feel like this show has given me a little Pavlov's dog response, because as soon as there's a happy scene, I start to become terrified.
It's like Walking yes. Dead.
Yes. It's like that, though. And June yeah. in that scene, she seemed mostly calm, but I also got this vibe from her that she was just kind of like, we've got to get back.
Like, why are you so relaxed?
Yeah.
Why are you bullying it? Bullying is loud. And then you're going, woo, when you get your shot. What the fuck, you guys? Come on.
Remember, Luke has been in Canada where he probably could bowl like that if he wanted.
But you're not in Canada, dude.
It was a weird scene.
It was, I mean... It was to fuck with us, you know, because
yeah.
we're not going, yeah, bowling's fun. We're going, dude, you guys need to be quiet. Everybody yeah. that's watching this show is thinking that. But Luke, it also, what I loved is, A, Luke is just the coolest, and he's so relaxed that even though I think it's crazy to be loud, I admired him for being relaxed. And then he's goofing around on that keyboard. Oh, Susanna. And then all of a sudden he's singing Al Green, Let's Stay Together. Mm-hmm. And he's such a good singer. I can't remember if we'd heard him sing before.
I don't think
but
so.
No.
It was so impressive. Mm-hmm. You see the colored lights and the atmosphere is nice. And singing, I'm so in love with you. Whatever you want to do is all right with me, because you make me feel so brand new, and I want to spend my life with you. Good times, bad, happy or sad, all that. I'm not going to sing because I'm not a good singer. But it was so effective that even though I was nervous that like the Gestapo was going to bust in or something, I was still incredibly moved by all of that. And they were dancing and nuzzling and everything. It yeah. was moving and anxious at the same time
beautiful.
For me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
I wondered why, if they had electricity, that they couldn't get the pin resetting mechanism to work.
Yeah.
Like, why?
Because they can have a keyboard.
That? What's happening? You've got a keyboard. What the heck's going on? Why can't you do that?
I don't know.
They had the lights on and the electricity was working.
Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't understand why they didn't have the pin reset are working as well.
I don't think the lights were on. I think they had hooked up like Christmas lights, but those were, I think, the only lights that were working.
But how would they be on?
Well, I don't know.
The
yeah.
I don't know.
Keyboard
but
keyboard was working too.
Yeah, and the bowling thing was working too.
Okay.
Like, things were
maybe
working.
They just didn't know how to run it or something, you know?
Yeah.
It was like an abandoned bowling alley.
He
right,
broke I think. It last time.
Yeah.
He probably did.
It was kind of, I thought it was fun to see them setting up the pins. Those things are slippery, though. If you ever walked out on a bowling alley lane, especially if you've had a couple beers, you'll just fall flat on your butt right away.
What are you saying, Jason?
Speaking from experience.
Take that advice from Jason to not do that so you don't slip and fall and hurt yourself. From my point, I kind of want to continue this, but I want to talk a little bit about Jaden.
Mm.
It kind of ties to something I think I said an episode or two ago about how kids growing up in Gilead don't know anything different. Jaden is old enough to remember some of Gilead before, some of the U.S. before it became Gilead, but he says it's like a dream, mm-hmm. like going bowling with his dad is like a dream.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this was a representation of the fact that kids are going to forget.
Oh, yeah, that, so, that worried June and,
yeah.
And Luke. They were like, oh, you don't remember? Like, what about Hannah then?
Yeah. I mean, growing up in Gilead is all they know.
And Hannah was even younger.
Yeah. So she's not going to remember going to... She probably won't remember going to the aquarium, although she might. I mean, June's having these memories mm-hmm. and flashbacks. What will Hannah actually remember out of any of that?
And what... You know how memories are, they're not reliable. They change based on how your life is mm-hmm. now and everything.
People could tell Hannah, oh, no, Hannah, we took you away from a mom who was really, you know, she was not able to take care of you.
Like, I'm sure they have.
Yeah, they can twist things around. And the more you hear the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're a kid.
Yeah, it clouds what you're thinking.
Let me ask you a question about Jaden. Why do you think he was helping them?
Well, he gave them an answer.
Yeah, that he thinks people should be able to talk to the people they want and see their family. It was interesting because he said, it's not so bad in Gilead. And I'm like, maybe not if you're a young guy.
Yeah.
You probably have it the easiest. I didn't know whether to take that at face value. And I was always suspicious of him. All the mm-hmm. way through until he got blown up and told them to run. And then only then was I like, okay, I guess you're a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I would presume he was telling the truth. You don't think so?
It seemed like a lot of risk for that kind of obscure reason. I mean, I liked him. I thought he did a good job.
It's freedom.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
You don't usually see that kind of selflessness and someone who has no skin in the game to say, you know, I was also suspicious of him and I liked his response. He also seemed a little bored to me.
Yeah.
Like I'm here reckless because I too. Have to be, and I'm not really,
he didn't seem like into it. All intense about his mission or mm-hmm. anything. He's like, right. Yeah, I'm just doing this for the hell of it. It's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was still young too. Like,
yeah,
he was a kid.
Yeah, he seemed like in his teens.
When I heard that click,
mm.
I knew exactly what it was.
At first, I thought he was pulling a gun on them.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I did too.
I felt bad because I really enjoyed his scenes with June and Luke and how he opened up to them a little mm-hmm. bit.
And June and Luke and Jaden really connected. They were mm-hmm. like buddies.
They did.
And once you know for sure that Jaden was a good guy, then you could see those scenes for what they were, which was just two guys having mm-hmm. a good time
yeah.
and bonding and connecting. And yeah, that moment when he clicks that mine and he goes, it's okay, it's okay. And then something right in the middle of a sentence.
Oh, scared the crap out of me.
Yeah, I jumped and then his body
my chair.
You figured more
flew
was
up
yeah.
and started to uh-huh. spin around all floppy like a rag doll with embers. It was horrifying and God, it seemed like something you would see in a war.
Pretty
you know?
Sure it's part of his leg so, was gone. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he was still alive afterwards yeah. going, oh, I'm like, oh my God, that's like so dark.
And his then friends like, were coming away. To get him or the other guardians were coming to get him. But you know, that mine was put there probably by the resistance.
That's what I wondered. Yeah. Like, why would they do that?
So you think the ones with the flashlights were Gilead, but then whoever came up in the truck was yeah. somebody else.
I do. Else. I think the ones
I'm gonna
with the
go watch it again.
Yeah,
I think
but
the
yeah,
ones with the flashlights were other guardians, like or people that he works with.
Yeah.
On first watch, I thought it was Gilead, but then when I was thinking about it later, I was like, maybe it's not Gilead, because I'm always trying to think, like, what's going to happen next. So then I was like, maybe it wasn't Gilead. And then when I watched it second, I really paid close attention to that scene. And then I thought it was the Resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't really look like you did. So I think you're probably right.
I looked at what they were wearing.
Mm-hmm.
The people that were coming for Jaden, I think, were his workmates, like Gilead. But I agree with Wendy. I think the people in the trucks, I think they were definitely Resistance. But hopefully...
I could be wrong.
That would be like, yeah, that's a weird cliffhanger then. It seems like they would be antagonists of some sort or another, you know, because it didn't seem like a triumphant. I mean, they pulled them apart.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Resistance would do that just to get them somewhere and see what they're dealing with first, kind of like the Commonwealth does in Walking Dead.
It could be some sort of border patrol. I don't think so, though, because they'd be on the other side, I think, not in this no man's land zone.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they made a point for Jaden to say the rebels leave these mines around. And we saw a man hanging and it said rapist. And June said the Gilead people don't write. That was another sort of signal that this is the stomping grounds of rebels. So
Gilead would use a symbol. They wouldn't write because women aren't allowed to read.
Exactly. I think, too, for Luke to see the man hanging, I think he was appalled by seeing that.
June's like, that was my Saturday afternoon.
Right. I think he's getting to see things. I think that he's now seeing things that are that June is almost numb to because she's seen so much of it. I mean, she was at that farm and that guy was shot right beside her. He was shot in the head. I mean, she's had to live through so many things.
Oh, yeah. All the handmaids getting mowed over by that train when she was running away.
Yeah.
And he got out relatively early.
Yeah.
Like anyone who judges June, I'm like, God, look what she's been through.
Yeah. I think you have to remember, and I think, because this isn't a series you can go back through and watch over and over again. It's
I can't.
You do forget. I think sometimes you do forget things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if I'm thinking that I'm misremembering something, I'll go look it up and reacquaint myself with something that happened before. But everything. I mean, June was thought she was going to be hanged in Fenway freaking Park.
Yep.
I mean, there's so many things that happen to her. I'm not excusing things that she does. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
On this show, people do things because they have a reason or because they don't have a choice.
She can't have normal responses to things any longer. Mm-hmm. She is shaped by her experiences.
Yeah. I think the June, I mean, I think Luke has reconnected with a piece of June that's inside her that still lives from the prior time, but also with part of the June that has been through all of these things because she knows what it's like in Gilead and because of Hannah. I think he's gotten closer to her. The one thing that scares me is Luke and Moira together before June arrived, every decision they made seemed to be, you know, well thought out, well planned, less on emotion, more on facts and what the repercussions could be. With June, Luke seems much quicker to make decisions based on emotion. And I'm worried about him making decisions like that. It just makes me a little anxious.
It's interesting because, I mean, we've kind of already talked about this, but they have gotten closer this season. And I think it's in part because he is more raw and chaotic and in touch with that anger and that need to get Hannah back and everything. And that's where June is too. So they can connect more. And then you're right. I think because they were able to come together a little bit more in that way, he's also been able to bring her back to it, be in touch with what she used to be, which is really nice to see. So they're connecting on a bunch of different levels. And I love that.
All right. Well, Jason, do you have another point?
No, I guess we did talk through that pretty well about about June and Luke and their adventure. So, nope, I don't have any more points, just notes.
All right. Well, why don't you start with notes? I have a couple of notes left. Wendy, do you have notes as well?
My only note, I had several, but we've talked about them all. My only note was that the scenes with Serena in the Wheeler house gave me a Rosemary's Baby vibe.
Oh, boy. Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah, it really gave me that.
That movie, man. Okay.
I never saw that.
Oh my goodness.
Jason, my parents saw it.
It's Halloween coming, Jason.
It doesn't sound like a fun movie.
It holds up. I think it holds up. Yeah. I think it holds up. It's creepy.
Very creepy. Okay, Jason, what do you got?
I have a few. So I think Lily was flirting with Moira. Kind of.
I thought that too.
She's like, what's with those two? Meaning Luke and June. They don't quit, Moira says. After everything they've been through, they keep fighting for each other. And then Lily's looking at Moira going, that's really nice having someone like that. Like, maybe that could be us. But Moira's not looking back at her. She's looking pained. And she goes, yeah. And I think she's remembering her girlfriend, Odette, who was supposed to be sent to the colonies but was killed, she found out later. So she's still heartsick over that, of course. But then a little bit later, Lily's like, so where are we going to go next? I don't know, Maine, Montreal, maybe Detroit. Detroit? Yeah, I would never go there even before. Why not? What's in Detroit? And Moira's like, oh, fuck Detroit. Fuck Detroit. And Lily's like, there's so many better cities. And she goes, I'm from Detroit.
And they seemed tipsy.
Lily's like, are you serious?
Yeah.
And they both start laughing. It was super cute. And it could just be nothing, but it seemed like they're hinting that that could be a thing, which would be cool.
I like seeing Moira seeming like she's
loosen up. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. She has been so worried about June and having to keep it together that it was nice to watch her let her guard down just a bit and not be so uptight.
And I like when she said, I'm from Detroit. She said it kind of rough. I'm from Detroit. Like, that's my neighborhood. That's my hood. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. It was a nice little pleasant scene, and I wouldn't mind seeing more from them. When Naomi and Serena in that flashback are in the orphanage, and Naomi says, I can't believe they said something about a rebel attack or something. I can't believe people would fight for what this country used to be. I mean, who would want that? And Serena's like, some people have a hard time moving on. And I'm like, yeah, that pesky freedom and diversity of thought, so overrated.
Yeah. Being able to read.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Without getting your hands chopped off.
Oh, man.
That was so lame. Lawrence has a plan, New Bethlehem, which apparently, well, Putnam says, a bunch of traitors, criminals, terrorists, do you want to welcome them back, coddle them, forgive them? So I guess Lawrence wants to invite the refugees back, but I'm like, why the fuck would they want to come back? But Lawrence says, if we keep the walls up and the borders closed, the country's going to die. I'm like, no one would want to live in Gilead as it is, except for religious extremists. So to motivate anyone else to ever want to come back there, it would have to fundamentally change. And I'm wondering if that's what Lawrence is suggesting. I mean, Putnam didn't even ask about that. He's just like, no, we're not going to invite those people back. So I don't know. Did you guys have any other take on any of that?
I think Lawrence, his idea would flourish if Putnam wasn't around. And I think that Lawrence probably does have a lot more ideas to shift things. I think he does want to make things better. He and Lydia have talked about, you know, making things better in Gilead. I think that probably includes loosening things up a bit. But also, in a country like Gilead, when things are so rigid, it takes a long time to shift beliefs.
So you think his idea is to change Gilead in a way that refugees would want to come back and then invite them back?
I think it won't completely change Gilead, but I think he wants to change it fundamentally in a way that would make it more attractive.
Because if his plan was just, let's invite the refugees back, who would ever come back, you know?
You wouldn't.
Nobody would.
That's why he's
That's why they're refugees. They wanted to get out.
I don't know if his plan is to make things better or he's just actively seeking the downfall. It's hard to tell.
But he'd have to have a pretext, at least.
Right. I think he's a survivor, and he knows he can't leave. He's not going to be welcome anywhere because of his history. So he's maybe he's just making the best that he can. But then on the other hand, Gilead did not get to be Gilead by compromising. You know, mm-hmm. it is the way it is because they are so rigid. So mm-hmm. I just don't think his ideas are going to take off. That's not, they sacrificed a lot and killed all these people and changed this crazy way of life to get where they are now. And their birth rate is rising.
Yeah.
It's not going to work if other commanders have the same mindset as Putnam. And we know they do. So either he's planning a mass execution so he can replace them all with people like Nick. I mean, maybe that's what he has in mind.
I don't think we're supposed to know yet.
No.
No. But I just don't understand on the surface how, like, if I was Putnam and Lawrence said, let's bring the refugees back, and I just ignored my first impulse, which was, we don't like those people. And my second question would be, well, they don't want to come back here. Why would you think they would want to come back here, Lawrence? And then what would he say to that?
Because we're the greatest country in the world. Because everybody wants our value from us. System.
No,
right. I mean, these are the specific
people that ran away. Yeah, I feel like there's a piece of his whatever he's telling them is his plan that we mm-hmm. didn't get to hear all of it. I don't understand it. Because why would you're watching Halloween and Michael Myers is chasing after somebody and then you find that person and go, why don't you go have lunch with Michael Myers? That'd be fun.
Because he's a piece got a of information knife missing. There. Yeah. Michael Myers wouldn't put the knife down long enough to have lunch with you.
Cut the steak. So I loved this exchange where Putnam is on the phone with Serena.
Oh my
and she's
gosh.
Like taking, you know, telling the proposal. And he's like, we'll take your consideration under proposal. Praise be. Click. That's how he hangs up. and then Lawrence like, you always had a way with the ladies. Well, we can't just let them run amok. We have to yank the leash sometimes. We all know how you like to yank things. Ah!
Lawrence, he can't resist.
Lawrence in top
he
form.
Can. Oh my God, Lawrence.
So funny. And Putnam just ignored it.
And Serena's the queen of the underhand digs. Like, she's like, well, I didn't expect you on this call. Like,
Lawrence is right. Like, well, we didn't know. We didn't.
Right. Yeah. It's great.
That was such a great thing.
I loved that part. Any part with Lawrence is usually entertaining.
That one was particularly like, oh my God.
Yeah.
The last thing I had noted is the episodes are in general shorter this season, right? It seems like they're coming in shorter than they usually do. 40 minutes, 40, 41. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Usually they're 50, I think.
Yeah. I wonder why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll have to ask Bruce Miller about that.
I don't know. If we ever get the chance to talk to him. So that's all I had.
Okay. We just talked about one thing that was on my list, which was about the conversation on the phone. Just double checking to make sure I don't have any other notes. Oh, the plums. I feel like we can't close out this part of the episode without talking about what they do find out about the future wives.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jaden explains to them that the plums, he calls them the plums.
Yeah.
The future wives, they're treated like little princesses. You know, they're the best of the best. They get whatever they want. And the training's for them to run the household. They're moving them through quickly, which means they're
trying to marry them off really young, 12
really,
years old.
Really, really young. They don't know where the schools are. But uh-huh. if she's still a plum, she's not married yet. But they gave them the flash drive. And so now that they've been taken, I hope they don't lose the flash drive.
Yeah, because none of that was that groundbreaking of information. They already mm-hmm. knew she was going to a school for young wives and yeah. that there was a risk that she would be married off. So this is like a tiny bit more detail, but nothing mm-hmm. really. But so, and I didn't catch that flash drive on first watch. So I was just like, well, that was a waste of time. But then, yeah, hopefully there's something else worthwhile on there that they would actually need.
I think the reason they had him share this information is mostly that things are going more quickly, so it will increase June and Luke's urgency in trying to get Hannah out.
Mm, yeah.
Because they may have thought, well, she's 12, you know, they probably,
right.
You know, she's still too young, but that doesn't seem to be stopping them. Like, they're moving things very quickly.
Yeah.
And the only other thing I had is I love that Luke told Jaden that he wrote the song, Let's Stay Together.
Yes. Did you write that? Yeah.
Yes.
And June right away was like, mm-hmm.
That was pretty funny.
Who knows the difference? It made me think so of that movie funny. Yesterday.
I gotta watch that.
About the Beatles. I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's really good.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us. One news item to share on this episode. There was a Forbes article that came out today, the day we're recording this, that talks about June, and it's got some quotes from Elizabeth Moss, where she's talking a little bit about season 5. These are the comments that she had. When she's asked about what June's focus is in this season, she says, I think that June is finding the person that she's going to be for the rest of her life. And I think that June is finding that the fight is something that she's never going to give up. She's never going to stop trying to get her daughter out. But at the same time, it's certainly not going to be just about her daughter. It's also about the future generation and providing a better world for them, which is becoming more and more her fight. She also went on to say that Gilead is still the enemy. They've not gotten any weaker. They're stronger, but also smarter, and figuring out ways to make itself known and accepted internationally. This is very dangerous and very problematic for June and Luke.
Yeah. And the sad thing is, if you look around, you'll see countries that are allowed to keep existing, because what are you going to do? That have shit like this going on, like the whole Uyghur thing in China, you know, they're just systematically torturing and destroying everyone who's part of this religion, and we can't do anything about it.
And our country is willing to still
deal with
those countries depending on how much we need them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it's really about. I mean, we have...
Yeah.
Ostracized Iran and Iraq, but yet we still deal with
China's
Saudi
like our
Arabia
biggest
and
economic partner. Yeah, Saudi Arabia. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting because in the sports community, this makes me think of what's going on in the sports community with regard to the Russia-Ukraine war. Russian athletes are not being allowed to compete in many sports due to the war with Ukraine. Like, that was the decision that was made by many different governing bodies internationally. Figure skating is one. There is a host of others where they just made the decision that this war is not okay. And
I mean, yeah, with Russia, it's a little less complicated than it would be you have to weigh all the factors. Like, Russia's doing something that's so overtly against international law and just trying to take over another country. That's clearly nobody wants that around the world. Mm-hmm. But also, it's easier to withdraw from them because there's not as many economic ties. Mm-hmm. And it's harder for the Europeans who depend on them for gas. So people are trying to figure out alternatives for that, so that, you know, what they're doing is really bad and it's easier to withdraw from them. So that makes it a little more cut and dry that, okay, everybody shut Russia out now, you know.
Yeah.
But if it was China invading Taiwan...
Nobody cares. Right.
I don't know. I mean,
right.
I hope they do care, because
it feels that way sometimes is what I meant. I know people care.
Yeah. I mean, Biden said we'd come to their aid, so I don't know.
Yeah. I think what they're trying to do is, with Russia, they're trying, and it seems unfair because we know most of the Russian people are not for this war, and they're being penalized, but it's trying to put pressure on that country, and I think it's working to some extent.
There's more protests and people speaking out and stuff. It's really just Putin, it seems like, one man.
And it seems like he came out in the last couple days kind of softening. You know, I'm not defending him at all.
No. I mean, he also annexed parts of the territories that they hold so that it would be like you're fighting against Russia if you fight in those territories.
Right.
And he's talking nukes and everything. It's insane.
I think he, when I say he softened, like he came out in a speech about the draft that he put on and kind of was backpedaling about the draft, which has made people, hundreds of thousands of people trying to leave Russia because of the draft. So I think he's backpedaling a little bit. But I guess we'll see.
He's worried about revolution.
He should be.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only so much pressure you can put on a country before it's going to bust.
Yeah.
You'd think,
All right. Well, let's move on to our listener feedback segment. Wendy, do you want to take the first one?
Sure. This is from our friend Erica Price. She writes, apologies for the lateness of this feedback. Did you guys notice at the end of the funeral procession, after Serena kissed Hannah, that Serena was aligned perfectly with the angel wing statue behind her? Thanks. Love the pod. I did notice that. I remember.
Yeah.
It was
I didn't notice that, but I know there was a scene in an earlier season where June was aligned with angel wings like that.
Yep.
Definitely.
So, interesting.
Jason, you want to take the next one?
Okay. Yeah. Diana Driscoll says, I'm listening to your coverage for episode 4. Great as always. Thank you. And I have some thoughts on Serena. Serena's love language is power. Who had it? Who doesn't? Who can give her power? How she can retain power? How else she can exert power? She sent the invite to Offred because she wants to remind June that she still has some power over her. She pushed all of Luke's buttons to show him that she still has power despite appearances. And her apparent displeasure at being at the house in the country is about power. She's in charge in the city, but here she's a guest. And she'll have to keep up the Gilead ways 24/7 and not be on the phone and composing invitations and taking tea with the ambassador to Venezuela. That's all done while she's in that. That's all done while she's in that house, and she hates it. And honestly, I think she's a walking incubator and advertisement for Gilead. Nothing more. Once that baby's born, she's done. I guarantee they will take the baby away and place her in a family of good parents. And Serena will, quote, have a difficult childbirth and could possibly be killed. She and Fred committed treason. And like Daphne mentioned, she's not even supposed to have sex with her husband. There isn't a chance in hell Gilead will allow her to keep the baby. They're keeping up appearances and keeping her happy until that baby's born. Once that happens, Serena's done for. It doesn't matter that she's a wife. In Gilead's eyes, her worth was tied to Fred. He's gone. The fact that they didn't seem interested in marrying her off like they would with any other high-ranking widow says a lot. I'm really impressed that you came up with all that without seeing this week's episode.
Yeah.
Because it really confirms everything she's saying.
Yeah.
Definitely. So Barbie Allen says they're way more interested in marrying off Lawrence than Serena. Serena has definitely been put in gentle exile. Her baby has pretty much been claimed by her friend, Naomi. When Warren and Naomi visited Fred and Serena in Canada early on, Naomi mentioned to Serena that if she and Fred still aren't free by the time that baby arrives, she and Warren would be happy to raise her son because the baby belongs in Gilead. That seemingly innocent, selfless offer definitely shook Serena. Wow.
That's another person predicted to get Serena's baby. My prediction... Who will get Serena's baby? June.
Really?
No, I don't know. That would be poetic justice.
Yeah, that would be. Kelly Burgess says, you guys asked me about my theories, and one of them is that Serena Joy is no longer a believer in Gilead, but she feels trapped. and so she plays along. I think she'll be one of the people that destroys Gilead. I feel like she has remorse for starting it, but doesn't know how to process her feelings. She still has faith in God, but realizes that they went too far. Plus, she wants her baby more than anything, so she's going along with everything to keep her baby safe in her mind. But like I said, I'm probably way off, I don't know why, but I find myself almost having more empathy for her than I do June currently. The episode honestly just confused me. I feel like I have no idea what's going on now. Hopefully you guys can help clear it up for me.
She's talking about last week's episode.
Yeah.
I actually pretty much agree with this at this point. Especially after this week, I think she's like, oh my God, I don't like this. You know?
Yeah.
She doesn't like, and this, they're just doing just how Gilead does.
Well, Serena's not in any condition to escape.
Yeah.
Like, she can't get out of there.
She doesn't know any of these people.
No. She doesn't.
She's put her hands in, she's put herself in the hands of strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy strangers.
Yeah. It's messed up.
And I really think, I'm starting to think that this was all planned. They knew that the crap was going to go down at that information center, and they had this all set up.
Mark's going to bust in like Rambo and save her.
In Mark, we
whisk
trust.
Her away. Will you be an American citizen? And she'll be like, yes, I will. Is my turn?
Yep.
Yes.
Alma Contreras says, poor Janine, I marvel how she stays so humble through all her near-death experiences and tortures. I'm glad she didn't die, and I really hope she gets out and has a happy ending. At this point, I still can't get on June's side, and I feel bad that I'm not more empathetic for her, and I should be. I wanted to mention about this ridiculous idea of Serena Joy getting shipped with Tuelo. No, no, no. She doesn't deserve to have him. She probably will end up getting herself married to another commander, but honestly, I have a feeling Serena Joy's baby is going to be taken away at birth and sent to Gilead. Wouldn't that be the icing on this disturbing cake? And I think that will make her humble herself and go to June for help. Just my speculation. We'll see.
Ooh, I wish I had done the order differently and Wendy had had to read that.
Yeah.
One. It would have been funny. Kelly Burgess sent in another comment. Glad to know that I'm not the only one that isn't a June fan. Honestly, if you look at everything that she's done, she's a pretty horrible person.
Do you want to read the next one too, since that was short?
Yes. So Lindsay Schlicht had the following to say about Border. While I don't give a shit about Lydia's pain, holy cow, acting chops and doubt. I realized at the end of that scene, I had my head tilted back and eyes wide like she was yelling at me. I loved seeing Moira finally get her fire back and seeing her actually supporting June, taking her to Mayday and willing to fight. I don't consider myself particularly brave, but I can't imagine not joining in the fight. I'd be so pissed about everything. I do love Tuelo, but his interest in a monster like Serena diminishes him somewhat for me. He's either blinded by a pretty face or so stupid he can't fathom a woman could be evil instead of just a victim. Either way, the chemistry between them grosses me out. That's admitting there's chemistry. As soon as I saw the booger playing cap... As soon as I saw the booger playing Commander McKenzie, I knew he'd be our next Fred. After Ozark and Walking Dead, this actor cannot play anything but the biggest douchebag of a series.
I know. That's agreed. They're like, we need a really huge douchebag. Who do we got? One. Let's
He's
get this
perfect.
Guy.
Oh, perfect. Seriously, I see his face and want to punch him.
Punchable face.
Yep. Mm. That's his new nickname. June at the car window was fantastic. She sounded like an animal, and it showed Serena how easily June can get to her. I hope Serena piddled herself a bit. It was nice seeing her scared for once. I can't help but wonder if these two aren't going to have to come to some kind of truce. Once Serena has her kid, she'll have just as much to lose as June. And now that she's been stationed in Ontario, she doesn't even have the limited protection being in Gilead away from June. This should be fun. Yes, it should.
Funny.
Alma Contreras says about the border episode, on this podcast, y'all mentioned Janine's son. In the book, he was sent to live with family, but on the show, Janine was told he had died in an accident. I can't remember what season it was, but June found out that he was alive and living in California. She never said anything, which is one of the reasons that I'm not in June's corner. And then Penny Lennox kind of answered that on the Facebook yes. group and said, I thought it was the reverse, that he died and June told Janine he lives at the beach, yeah. which I believe is true. So Janine, I think
yeah.
that's what she thinks.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Janine thinks that's not he's cool at either. The beach.
Yeah.
And then Salome wrote in saying, I lived through the beginnings of the Iranian Revolution, parts of the Iraq-Iran War, and the later years in the Islamic Republic. I have to say the show really captures the fear that the eyes, aka morality police, instill in people really well. The sounds and the imagery with the hanging, etc., are very accurate from what I witnessed. And of course, the hypocrisy that comes with, quote, pious men. Thank you for talking about Iran and the brave women and girls that are fighting back. May they win and regain their freedom once and for all. Thank you so much for writing.
Thank you so much.
I think it's a great reminder that this is a fictional show, but this is reality for people, for women that live right now in 2022.
Yeah.
And I never really put the morality police together with the eyes until recent events, but that just goes to show you how I've lived 50 some years without really thinking about that.
I know there was an Islamic revolution in 1979 in Iran that toppled the monarchy and then instituted these religious extremist laws. This is a government mm-hmm. run by a religion. And there's a mandatory hijab law. And my dentist is Iranian. She's the sweetest person ever, to the point where when I moved an hour away, I still drive just to go to her for my dentist. But anyway, she left the country, then her family did. But now, because this woman died, because we talked about it last week, but it was a young woman who they said had too much hair showing or something and took her away to the re-education center and she ended up dying. And now
I think they beat her to death.
Yeah. They slammed her head against the wall and mm-hmm. she had blood coming out of her ears. And now it sparked unrest all over the country mm-hmm. from this podcast, The Daily. It's my favorite podcast.
Yes.
They did an episode on it. I know you listened. They said protesting women were taking off their hijabs and tossing them into the fire. And now protesters are calling for an end to the Islamic Republic. And their protesters are saying things can't go back to how they were. And I hope they're right, but I fear they're not, you know? I don't know.
And it's so ingrained because I've been watching some TikTok videos of what's going on in Iran right now. And it's so ingrained in how we think about Iran and how we think about Iranian women that it's almost like they don't have bodies.
Yeah.
Because
they're not allowed to show curves.
Or even hair or anything. Yeah. And so we're seeing Iranian women in the streets with, you know, hair and regular clothes. And it really opens your eyes at how it must feel to, I mean, I can't imagine, but just to live in that.
If you watch Handmaid's Tale and see all these handmaids in their red garb with their blinders on, you know, that thing that they wear on their head and think, oh, that's fiction. Look over here at what these women are forced to do. And some people would say that the situation in Iran doesn't apply because the religion is Islam and not Christianity, and those are different. But I think the way to think about it is about religious extremism of any kind. Like any religious group or person that practices the idea of like live and let live, I can respect.
Look at the history of any religion.
there's mm-hmm. hundreds of millions of Muslims and Christians around the world that don't try to force their morals on right. other people. They might try to persuade, but they don't force it. But when people try to bring religion into government, that's where I get upset. And now we have members of Congress proclaiming that the church is supposed to direct the government. And there's a movement across the country to put people in power at all levels, local, state, federal, who favor this kind of thing. So the midterms are coming up. Please vote, everyone. It's important.
Yes. It's freedom of religion, which means
freedom.
You're free to choose your religion, and I'm free to choose my religion.
Mm-hmm. Or not to have
right.
any.
Or not to have exactly.
Yeah. This message from Salome got me thinking about a lot of different things, and I don't know how I stumbled across this, but I read somewhere, you know, if you think something like The Handmaid's Tale can't happen in the United States, it already has. Wikipedia says slave breeding in the United States was the practice in slave states. Slave owners would systematically force the reproduction of enslaved people to increase their profits. It included coerced sexual relations between enslaved men and women or girls, forced pregnancies of enslaved women, and favoring women or young girls who could produce a relatively large number of children. So we already had Handmaid's Tale-like situation right here in the United States.
And then when their children were old enough, they were sold off the ranch to the highest bidder. Yeah. Yeah. This is and that's 150 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not that long ago.
A couple few generations. Yeah. Yeah.
We've said this before. Margaret Atwood, she didn't base everything in The Handmaid's Tale off ideas she came up with. It all came from situations that have happened in the world before.
Mm-hmm. And what's actually in the Bible and things like that.
Yeah. We do have two voicemails.
Here's one from Teach. I don't know if Teach has called in before. Here he is.
I don't think so.
Hi, Daphne, Wendy, and Jason. This is Teach from Wisconsin. Please forgive me for not watching Handmaid's Tale with the children. I'm calling about episode 5. I think there was one detail that really jumped out to me that says a lot about where Lydia is going. When she was talking to Commander Lawrence, he talked about, you know, these men are pious, they need a little kink. And then he said, you know that. And there was this weird moment where Lydia like kind of cocked her head a little bit and said, do I? And I think in the history of Lydia's character, that is the moment where she started to become disillusioned by the men running Gilead. I think she's a true believer through and through. And I've read the Testaments. I've read the Testaments, and I think this might be the beginning of the bridge to Lydia becoming how we understood her so far to where she's going to be in the Testaments.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Thanks, Teach.
Thanks, Teach. And here's Rennie.
I just have a quick observation related to episode 4, which is that when June looked at the how to clean your handgun video on YouTube, that video would also have advised her that if you're going to bury your handgun in the snow, put it in a plastic bag first.
I did wonder about that.
I think it was too late by the time she watched the video.
Yeah, I think she watched the YouTube video after she took it out.
Yeah. It was extra dirty then.
Yeah.
I think she was just joking though, but yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
All right. That's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
While you're there, be sure to check out our other shows.
If you're not watching Andor, that's been really great.
I've heard really good things about it.
Yeah, it's more mature. It's like a spy thriller. It's Star Wars, you know, but it's more complicated and a little more adult. And I'm really digging that. I also think House of the Dragon is amazing, what Rima and Kristen and Rennie, who just called in, and all the guest hosts, Wendy, David was just on there.
David was great.
So much knowledge and passion goes into that.
I disagreed with everything he said, but that's okay.
Interesting. You should tell him.
Wendy, when you disagree with people and you're listening to a podcast, do you talk back to it?
Yes. Or I go to the like messenger threads and like, this is why you're wrong.
Because yeah. I will. I'll be in the car and I'll be just like, no, no, that can't be right.
It's, right.
Yeah.
I just like wish I was on the podcast.
Yes. I was glad I wasn't on this last one though, because
interesting.
I think it wouldn't have went well because I wasn't so happy with it.
Oh boy. I want to mention we would totally appreciate it if you would leave us a rating or a review on your podcast platform of choice. We've gotten a few good ones on there, but if you're digging our podcast, please go check us out on Apple Podcasts or wherever else and leave us a review. That would be awesome. We appreciate it.
And you're starting the very last part of The Walking Dead.
That's right.
We're going to have instant reaction videos on YouTube every Sunday night at 10.
Yep. Yep. So how can people find out? If you go on to podcastica.com, there's a little YouTube icon up in the corner. Click that and it'll take you to our YouTube page. But yeah, we're doing those at 10 p.m. Sunday Eastern time, right after the episode airs. We'll go on and just say what we thought quickly. And if you are, you know, just wanting to connect with somebody after that airs, or you can watch it later too.
I'm excited about that. It's been so long.
I'm sad. Epic. I'm like worried and sad.
Yeah, I feel like similarly. Yeah.
I thought it was ready. We talked about this on Run for Your Lives. Mm-hmm. I thought it was ready for it to be over, and I don't think I'm ready anymore.
I know. It's like, no.
No.
It's like the sand is slipping out of my hands or something. Mm-hmm. That's how it feels.
Yeah.
It came quick. I feel like it came quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad we'll all be together for the finale. So that will be
that's right. Really yeah. Great. If you don't, I mean, I think everyone who's into The Walking Dead probably knows, but we're doing a live screening of the finale with the live podcast after. It's in the San Francisco Bay Area. If you think you might want to make it out to that, go to podcastica.com/TWD finale party and you can find more information on how to get tickets and everything.
That is going to be epic. I'm mm-hmm. really excited for it.
Me
it's
going to
be so fun.
But here on the Handmaid's Tale podcast, next on the Handmaid's Tale podcast, The Handmaid's Tale season 5, episode 6, Together.
Together, because
obviously,
they were taken apart.
Yeah, now they're together.
Now they're back together. Yay, Duke. It's all fine.
I just called him Duke.
You did. Oh, goodness.
I also, we haven't mentioned this enough, but Daphne has another great podcast that she does called Run for Your Lives with Paik, and you're kind of in the middle of a special time or coming up here, right?
On Monday, we're posting our 100th episode.
Nice.
That's amazing.
I can't believe it. I feel like we just started recording maybe 6 months ago, but it's mm-hmm. been 2 years. And yeah, episode 100 is coming out on Monday. It's a special episode. We're interviewing M.R. Carey, who is the writer of The Girl with All the Gifts.
That's oh, awesome. That was so good. Yeah.
So much fun.
He's a great guy, too.
Yeah, we're hoping to do more interviews in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
In addition to covering movies and
that's yeah. my favorite zombie book I've ever read.
I liked the book. Yeah. Yeah, I think the movie was a little disappointing.
A little bit, I
yeah, because I was excited for it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was okay.
I read the book just before we covered the movie, so that I would have both perspectives. And then we did the interview with him and he answered every question we had and also just shared a lot of insight into the casting and the process. And mm-hmm. since he wrote the book, but he also wrote the screenplay for the movie, he was really connected. I feel like when someone who comes up with the original source material, you know, adapts it to the screen, I pretty much, whatever the end product is, I try to be happy with it because it's what they envisioned for the movie, like when they were adapting it
yeah,
and figuring
for
it
sure,
out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we're celebrating 100 episodes and we're already moving into season 5. We couldn't leave October with us taking a break, so we're doing It-tober, where we're covering all of It, the miniseries, and the two films.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's funny.
We'll take a break in November, but yeah.
You're like, in October, we're covering all of it.
All of it.
I have an aversion to clowns, but I wanted to watch it, so I watched them, and I fast-forwarded all the clown parts. True story, both movies.
Something funny I learned when we were getting ready to do this, Tim Curry is afraid of clowns as well.
Oh my. Poltergeist
every
ruined
time he
clowns
saw
for
himself
me.
In the mirror, he yeah. startled.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, when I was a little kid, clowns were still considered fun, but they are not at all anymore.
It was Poltergeist. No. It just ruined it.
Oh my gosh, that, oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, forever. I remember somebody, when I was pregnant with my first daughter, somebody bought me a whole set of clown stuff for her nursery, and I was like, no.
That's going in the garage.
No, that's immediately going in the trash. Sorry. Not sorry.
All right. That's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Do you guys want to go bowling?